Hello and welcome to another all-new Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro.
There's an assumed Catholicism behind this, even when I'm not overtly teaching or preaching, even though there will be lessons intertwined in the stories. But I wanted to be careful not to become or be thought of as a teaching show in the sense that, all right, we're going to shut down all the good storytelling in order to teach something.
That's Paul McCusker of the Augustine Institute talking about his new audio drama for kids titled Welcome to Hope Springs. Think Adventures in Odyssey, but Catholic. That's all I'm going to say now, but you don't want to miss this conversation with Paul McCusker that's coming up real soon. And after that, Jillian Cantor will be with us to tell us what she has learned from her kids while on vacation in Rome. And that's in about 15 to 20 minutes. And then,
around the time I was 13 going on 14, our parish was looking for a new choir director. And my mom says, why don't you do it? I'm like, Mom, I'm 13 years old. No one's going to take me seriously. And the next week, the priest comes up to me and he goes, would you like to be our new choir director? And I go, Father, I'm 13 years old. I could not do that. He goes, yeah, you can. Just think about it.
That is our featured artist of the week, a young singer-songwriter from not too far away from where I am here, just north of Toronto. Her name is Sylvia Kay, and if you want to find out whether she ended up directing the adult church choir at age 13, you'll have to stay tuned. Coming up in our second half hour, Sylvia will also tell us about her music, and we will get to listen to some of her latest songs. Remember that the best place to listen to the Salt and Light Hour is on the Salt and Light Plus app. It's an easy download at your favorite app store. Coming up is Paul McCusker, creator of the new Augustine Institute audio drama, Welcome to Hope Springs. But first, here is our featured artist of the week, Sylvia Kay, with her single, Never Left.
Compassion and full of love, full of forgiveness and full of grace that shakes me to my very core. He said, go, your faith made you well, so don't you fear going out into the deep. My hand will guide you all the way. Sometimes it's calling can shake your ground before it gives you peace. So I lift my hands and praise you once again. I breathe in deep, surrender everything. 'Cause I trust in you. Good and so much more. So how could I not bow down and give my heart to you and sing this song of praise? I've learned that trust in while your ground shakes can change your everything. So I lift my hands and praise you once again. I breathe in deep, surrender everything. 'Cause I trust in you, my Lord and my God. I look back on my life, you never left me, Lord. I sing this song forevermore and lay your
We're listening to Sylvia Kay with her single, Never Left, and we're going to be speaking with Sylvia Kay in about 25 minutes, so stay tuned. Some of you who listen to Christian radio, or if you're a fan of the Focus on the Family broadcasts, surely are familiar with the long-running children's audio program, Adventures in Odyssey. It's a great program that teaches kids all kinds of lessons about Christian virtue. One of the producers and main writers of that show, Paul McCusker, is now working with the Augustine Institute on a new audio drama project titled Welcome to Hope Springs. Listen to this.
It's 68 degrees on a very pleasant Saturday morning in Hope Springs.
We are at the grand opening of the restored Hope Springs train station,
which is finally ending its years of abandonment.
Whoa! This looks like the real thing!
Check out this dining car. It's amazing! I want to live here!
Imagine an entertaining series of audio stories that bring the whole family together through relatable characters, wholesome humor, and a few surprising twists and turns.
Wait, what's that kid doing?
He's kneeling. It looks like he's praying.
Why is a kid our age praying in a graveyard?
The Augustine Institute proudly presents Welcome to Hope Springs.
It's just a place where folks can enjoy themselves and learn a few things along the way.
Learn more at hopesprings.org.
Welcome to Hope Springs.
I had the chance to speak with Paul McCusker last week, and he told me all about how to produce great storytelling that is grounded in faith, family, and everyday adventures. He also told me about his conversion to Catholicism. Paul McCusker, welcome to the Salt and Light Hour. It's so good to meet you.
Likewise, it's good to be with you.
It's so good to meet you because I'm a big fan of Adventures in Odyssey, as I'm sure a lot of our listeners are. How did you end up working on that show? Or how did you end up even just doing Christian audio drama writing?
Yeah, the short version is my formative years were spent at Grace Baptist Church in Bowie, Maryland. Uh-huh. And it was a very arts-minded church.
Oh.
And through a number of influences, there was a touring group in the 70s called the Jeremiah People. Chuck Bolte headed that. That name would be familiar to Odyssey fans. And Chuck and this touring group would come through. I began to develop this interest in writing. I wanted to do drama, but I wanted to do it like they did it because it wasn't the embarrassing kind of Christian drama. It was very sharp. It was funny and very poignant. And it was everything it needed to be. And so they influenced me, and I started writing for my church, just sketches and then one-act plays and full-length plays. And all this was at a time when nobody was really writing this stuff.
Right.
And so there was a need for it. Publishers were like, well, we'll publish what you've done. We want to do this. And there was this whole movement in the 80s towards doing, especially in the evangelical community, Christian drama, drama of various types. And because of my connection to Chuck Bolte, circumstances changed for me to such a degree that I moved from Maryland to work with him in Southern California.
Okay.
And he was, I was working with him at a ministry there. And then he was consulting with Focus on the Family. Mm-hmm. And they had begun to dabble with audio drama. And so I came on, he came in and said, look, they need writers. Are you interested in working with them? And I said, sure, I'll give it a try. And so I did. And that was the precursor to Adventures in Odyssey, which then led to Adventures in Odyssey. And Chuck Bolte was the executive producer of Odyssey for the first 10 years.
What a great opportunity. So for any budding Christian drama writers that might be listening, what would you say is the secret to not writing what you called embarrassing Christian
oh,
dramas?
Oh, well, the truth is, I think the short version of that would be to keep from being embarrassing. Remember, first and foremost, it's not about the sermon. You're not doing dramatized sermons. What you want to do is tell a good story. We need good storytellers, and that means compelling plots and characters and fully realized plot lines and stories that actually come to a good end with all the rules of good writing. And then you could explore what that theme might be. And I know that There are really good writers who can start with a theme without ever getting preachy about it. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, most of us are not those writers. So we have to be very careful because we let the message and the sermonizing get in the way of good storytelling. And that's when it becomes embarrassing.
That's right. That's the message, right? The message is that the story is more important than the message.
Exactly. Jesus is our model. Look how Jesus...
He told parables.
He told the stories.
Good stories.
And you know, you got the theme and you got the message. Who is my neighbor? And a man had two sons, the prodigal son. You look at the memorable stories that he told and the parables and then the themes that came out of them. And you knew he had a theme going into it.
Yeah,
and yet
exactly.
You still had a great story, compelling in all the right ways,
mm-hmm.
and without him spelling out the theme. Because that's the other thing. He let it sit, he let it rest. He trusted the Holy Spirit to go with them to think about the story he had told because he rarely spelled it all out.
No, exactly.
You know, let the story just do what it does and let people work it through.
Exactly. If you have to explain it, it's probably not a very good story.
Yeah.
Is it fair to say that through writing and all the projects that you worked on, that eventually led you away from Focus on the Family and those projects and into the Augustine Institute? Can you tell us about that transition?
Concurrent with everything, you know, the connection between my writing life and my spiritual life it's just always been intertwined. But I was received into the church, well, now it's almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
And when I came into the church, I wondered if everything I'd been doing for the evangelical Protestant churches mm-hmm. through the writing and through Odyssey and everything, if there was a place in the Catholic community for that. And I honestly didn't know the answer. I mean, the answer might well have been no. In fact, for a long time, it seemed to be that the people who publish and who do these things weren't. They believed in the power of story and they gave verbal assent to, yes, story is very important. But nobody wanted to invest in it. Nobody mm-hmm. wanted to explore, but what kinds of stories? I mean, early on, it was like, well, we can't sell them.
Yeah.
The Catholic community won't buy them. And my theory was that the Catholic community was watching and reading and listening to a lot of secular stuff because it was either evangelical Protestant, which sometimes meant they were bashing Catholics, or it wasn't in line with theology. So it was just easier to mm-hmm. go with what the culture was providing.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, by the grace of God, Dr. Tim Gray, who's founder and president of the Augustine Institute, he and I met, and he spoke my love language. He basically said, you know, I'm wondering if you could do for us what you've been doing for the evangelical community all these years, because I thought it was a great training ground, and I mm-hmm. think I've learned a few things. And I thought, well, let's see if the Catholic community wants it. And so we began by producing saint dramas, fully produced like our Narnia with Focus on the Family.
Yes.
So we did four saint dramas and Robin Hood, St. Francis and St. Patrick. And while I was doing that, I was developing this new thing called Hope Springs.
Okay.
So Welcome to Hope Springs, which is the new series, has been actually gently developed over the last 10 years as I've been writing novels for kids. I've been doing a lot of non-audio drama, exploring and creating this world of around this small town in Colorado and developing it so that when we reach this point in the last few months to be able to launch the audio drama, that's where we are.
That makes sense because I was going to ask you, why is Hope Springs, Welcome to Hope Springs coming now? And it's not because... Yep. It's a new idea. You've been working on this, can I say, for the 11 years that you've been at
Augustine. Yeah, first we wanted to know if the Catholic community even wanted anything like that.
Right.
And the answer seemed to be, possibly. And especially parents and grandparents who want a Catholic-infused perspective in their entertainment. And so we said, okay, the time is right. Now we can go ahead and produce and release this thing.
So we have then Welcome to Hope Springs is a mm-hmm. new show. There are 10 episodes, first season.
Yep.
It's an audio drama.
Mm-hmm.
Give us the elevator pitch. What's it about?
Yeah, well, it's fully produced. We write for 10, 11, 12-year-olds, but honestly, we write so that younger kids and older kids and grown-ups can listen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's for the family. It's kind of like Odyssey. I hesitate to say that because the similarity is only two similarities. One is We're writing for that age group because we learned over the years it's a great age group to write to.
It is.
And then the other is that it takes place in a small town.
Yeah.
But it, other than that, it's very different in many respects than Odyssey. But we've just done the first season, as you said. We've produced the second season, and that should come out in May.
That's good to know. So there will be a second season.
Yeah. And then we've actually recorded the third season. So it's in post-production now.
Okay. So that's happening.
And I am working on scripts now for season four.
So is the idea, and again, so you've made it very clear that you're not in it. You're not, these are not lessons. You're not trying to teach kids anything, but there are lessons.
There's
virtue stories.
Yeah. It's thematically. And if there's a filter, like every entertainment has a filter over it, whether that's a secular philosophy or Christian worldview or whatever the worldview is. And this has a solidly Catholic worldview. And most of the characters come from a Catholic perspective. There's an assumed Catholicism behind this, even when I'm not overtly teaching or preaching, even though there will be lessons intertwined in the stories. But I wanted to be careful not to become or be thought of as a teaching show in the sense that at some point, some character is going to say, now the catechism tells us this. And that might happen, but it's got to be part of the story. It's got to be part of the character. It's not going to be, all right, we're going to shut down all the good storytelling in order to teach something. It's interwoven.
Yeah. So even though it's not adventures in Odyssey, it's still adventures in that
sense.
In Hope Springs, because you have children who are characters.
We've got slice of life stuff, very relational.
Yeah.
What is the Catholic perspective in terms of our relationships with parents and our siblings and school and all the things that we do and the kind of adventures these kids get into range from very normal slice of life to a little bit higher adventure in terms of solving some mysteries and things coming up. And then some very, I want to call them odd things. I'm very wary to say supernatural, but let's just call them offbeat scenarios.
Okay.
Because our catchphrase is everyday wonders and eternal mysteries. And one of the things I love about writing as a Catholic is that the Catholic Church. The church embraces the mystery. If you go into the saints' lives, weird things happened.
Yeah.
Unexplainable things happened.
Yeah.
And that's what I touch on in a lot. So there's a lot of history to this because it's a fixed place in Colorado, fictional town. But the history of the West is fascinating to me. But the other part of it is our audience is part of the flow like we are of history.
Yeah.
And of God's work in history. And it's their stories in a bigger story that's in yet a bigger story. And that's one of the things that I keep going back to in with Hope Springs, that there's a Catholic filter, but we're also looking at this broader view that touches on everyday wonders, but also these eternal mysteries. Some unusual things happen that are not easily explained. And I love that part of it. I'm a bit weird that way, but
no, that sounds fascinating, and it sounds actually very Catholic. So I'm very, very excited to
the Catholic
to listen
imagination is how a friend of mine put it. He said this fits well within a Catholic imagination.
Yeah, and the mysticism and the mystery, the mystery. Okay, so then it's available through Formed. It's available on other podcasts.
Everywhere. We put it out everywhere. It's on Spotify and Apple Music and YouTube.
Okay, so it should be easy to find if
a little
people
bit of
have
everywhere.
Title.
Yeah, if you just put in the search line,
Welcome to Hope Springs,
if it's there, it should pop up.
That's so wonderful. Paul, it's been so good meeting you.
Yeah.
I'm sorry we don't have more time because it sounds like we could, but maybe you can come back and we can have
anytime.
More conversations about Christian Catholic writing.
Multi-part, whatever you want to talk about.
Thank you for all the work you've done over the last 40 years and very excited about this new program.
Yeah.
Welcome to Hope Springs.
Yeah.
God bless.
Thanks so much.
Take care and happy Easter.
Yeah. The Lord is risen.
Amen. Indeed, he is risen.
Yeah.
Paul McCusker is a writer and producer best known for his work on Focus on the Family's Adventures in Odyssey. He is the creator of the new kids audio drama, Welcome to Hope Springs, available through formed.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, this is John Michael Talbot, and you're listening to the Salt and Light Hour with Deacon Pedro. Remember, all things are possible with God.
If you like this program, you can listen to it at slmedia.org/slhour or subscribe to the Salt and Light Hour Catholic podcast anywhere you get your podcasts. And now it's time for
What I Learned from My Kids with Jillian Cantor. Jillian, welcome back to the program. Happy Easter.
Thank you. Same to you.
Easter, I know we spend so much time talking about how Lent is 40 days, but nobody talks about the fact that Easter is 50 days.
Way more feasting than fasting.
Way more feasting than fasting. And you just came back from Rome.
We did. Yes.
How awesome is that?
Yeah, that was a beautiful trip. And guess what? That's where today's lesson is coming from.
I was going to say, you must have learned a lot of things from your kids while you were
in Rome. It's not Italian, unfortunately, but I did learn a lot of things.
You learn how to make pasta.
No, I learned. Oh, so good. Anyway, the lesson, it is not the end of it all. So that came from my eldest. It really came from everybody, but we'll get to that point. So this trip to Rome was the result of a lot of dreaming and planning and saving, and then of course spending. So I've mentioned before here that our eldest son graduates and heads off to university this coming fall, and I'm not prepared for that at all. Last summer, anticipating the how hard this year was going to be as we kind of say a lot of goodbyes and move on to a lot of big things, I'm very dramatic about it, as you can tell. But anyway, in preparation for that, or in planning for that, I was just thinking, like, what can we do to commemorate this, like to mark this big year that's ahead? And I told the kids, dream big. Where should we go next year? Can we do something like that? Can we plan a big trip? And the kids were like, go camping, rent an RV. And I'm like, well, let's dream bigger. So I think, I'm not exactly sure how, probably it was heavily influenced by me, but the idea of Rome came into being. And so we talked about it, dreamed about it, talked a little about like, what could we see in Rome? And I'm, having been there myself before, and David and I have been there once together, just like, oh, well, how beautiful it would be to revisit that and to take our family or children along. As David and I started to realize that this might be possible, we kind of stopped talking about it because we wanted it to be a surprise for the kids and sure enough, Christmas. And I will add, but this is a story for another day, with the great, great help of St. Joseph, after a novena to him, we realized, yeah, we can actually do this. We can pay for these tickets and we can make this happen. So we zipped our lips about it. And on Christmas morning, that was the gift to the kids, was we're actually doing it. We're going on this trip. So from December to March, it became a whirlwind of planning, dreaming, what do we want to see, asking input, learning things, booking things, spending more money on things, until finally, these 2 weeks in March, we were able to get on that plane and go. And of course, you having been there before, or to any of our listeners who've been there, and to anyone who has not been there, but have dreamed of it or looked at pictures of the Vatican or any of it, as you might imagine or know, it's beautiful. It's home. Like, that is the thing that struck me.
Really?
And yeah, just even on that last day, that last visit to St. Peter's, looking around, and I was just like, I can't go. I'm going to miss it so much. It's just a piece of me.
Really?
And where that comes from, I don't know, whether it is just that the family of the church, just felt like home. And so to be able to introduce our children to that, to witness them as they experienced international travel for the first time, seeing new things, a new culture, just the feast it is for all the senses. As a parent, to be able to offer that to your child and to see them as they experience it was a great, great grace and a gift, and one that I will have in my heart and my mind forever. And as plans had gone, like, we were busy. We packed it full. We had something every day. We had a chance to go to Assisi. We saw the bones of St. Francis. We saw Carlo Acutis. In Rome, we saw the mantle of St. Joseph. We saw the veil of St. Mary. Of course, we saw St. Peter's Vatican, Vatican Museums, Colosseum. We did a Vespa tour. We did a cooking class. The days were full and good and grand. And when we were done, we would all head back to our tiny Roman apartment where there was just two bedrooms and a kitchen. And that was it. One bathroom. That was all. So it was really concentrated family time, time spent together. And I cherished it all. Of course, we had our moments. This is not a trip of perfection and like perfect family living and kids who just behave themselves all the time, or even grown-ups that behave themselves all the time. There are, of course, difficult moments within family, but to be able to have that concentrated family time was just so good for me as a mom, to be able to see who my kids are growing up to be. And even as we went about our day's business, like usually there was one grown up at the front with Google Maps, a trail of kids following, and then the other parent was walking behind to make sure everybody was following along. And on those occasions where it was my turn to walk at the back of the pack, to be able to see how the kids paired off, or who they communicated with, or how they interacted with other people, was, again, just that experience of seeing who your kids are becoming and the relationships that they're developing as siblings, and to know, you know, this is family and it's for life, and to see them appreciate that was, again, like when somebody asked me at the end of this trip, what was your favorite part? That was it. I'm like, this is such mm-hmm. a mom answer, but it was seeing my family together.
Mm-hmm.
So as you can imagine, and as I knew about myself, that last day of our trip was really hard because I saw it all coming to an end. And as we were back in, we'd been in Rome, we went to Assisi, we were back in Rome, we were just trying to catch those last churches that we had missed. And so one of those was the Church of the Gesù, which again is just grandiose in art and architecture and mm-hmm. beauty, just right there in front of you. And last day, very tired, Leo was just kind of cradled in my arms. We were sitting in the front pew, and we were there around noontime, and there was this beautiful ray of light that was coming in from a window high above that was like landing. The beam was landing right there in front of the altar. And so he and I were sitting in that front pew, and I was just trying to quiet myself, because it is as beautiful as these places are, and they are places of worship, they are also tourist places, mm-hmm. destinations. And so there can be a lot of noise, and it can be distracting. And I was just trying to settle myself to say thank you for all this trip had been for me and for my family, for all the things that we had seen and the wonders we beheld. And as I was doing that, I look up to see Clara walking across in front of me through this ray of light. And she just looked angelic. And then I looked for all my other kids. And I saw Henry and Annie kneeling beside each other praying. And I saw David and Jane off to my side. They were also in a pew on the other side of the aisle. Joseph was walking around looking at the art. And again, it was just that, oh, this is us, and this is where we are, and this is home, and this is going to be a part of them forever. And I was just thanking God for that, but also carrying the sorrow of it being done. All this beautiful, over a year, this anticipation and the planning and the dreaming and the surprising, and it was going to be over. So sitting in that sorrow, but also realizing, okay, well, we got other things we want to see today. We got to get going. And so I looked down at Leo, and I said, okay, bud, let's keep going. And as soon as those words left my mouth, I just lost it. And I started to cry, because I knew, though those words came from my mouth, they were actually God's words to me. Let's keep going. This trip wasn't the be all and end all. In fact, it is the start of something. We were able to give our children this experience, not so that they would just remember those 2 weeks, but so that it would plant them somewhere, home in Rome, part of our faith. This huge part of our faith is the stories that are held there now are within them. And wherever these moments that took place, those couple of weeks in March, wherever these moments take them, it's just the beginning. And so Leo, poor Leo, is receiving my tears as they're falling down my cheeks, and he's looking up at me helplessly. And I'm like, oh gosh, I'm so sorry, buddy. And I just, so, you know, had to get up, keep going. But with those words in my heart, like, let's keep going, and just appreciating the beauty of that and how God could speak to me in that moment. It's overwhelming. So as we're going about our day, like the last day there, I had this a big plan in my head that it was like, we're going to have some sort of celebratory dinner. It's our last day. Let's just embrace this. But of course, as things go, and like we had other plans, we wanted to get to evening vespers at this particular church. That never really happened. This montage in my head that was going to take place around a dinner table with us eating and laughing, like shots, quick shots to everybody enjoying themselves in slow motion. No, that didn't happen. And the next morning, like, we're trying to get to a bus, to get to a train, to get to a plane. So there was no time for melancholy. It was just get up and go. And so I had said to Joseph, our oldest, I kind of just expressed my disappointment in that we didn't get to have that grand last hurrah moment. And he, in a way that only a teenage boy can say, he just said, well, we're all going home together. We're still going to see each other tomorrow. I'm like, oh, right. This isn't the end of it all. Let's keep going. Like, I don't need to be so dramatic, right? We are still all going home. And this is, yes, just the beginning of something. And the only way we can figure out what is the beginning of is to just keep going and to see what tomorrow holds. So here we are, home from Rome, home from this dream trip, but it sits still within our hearts with lots to still uncover from what we've seen and learned. And who knows? Who knows where it takes each one of our kids? Who knows where it takes us all together as a family? But we hold that time together dear with grateful anticipation for where it will carry us. And so for anybody who's listening, whatever that is, whatever the dream is, whatever you're experiencing, whether it be good or bad or like a moment of sorrow, a moment of joy, the completion of that is not the end of it all. It is mm-hmm. the beginning of something new. And so my prayer for myself and my kids, but also my prayer for anyone out there experiencing the same thing, is that you have the open heart and mind to know what it is next, what it is that tomorrow holds. It's not the end of it all.
What a beautiful Easter message, isn't it? That it's not the end of it all. Let's just keep going. Thank you, Jillian. Thank you for sharing that. I mean, I know some of your stories from Rome and I've seen some of the photos, so I can really imagine how all this was playing out in real time. But thank you for sharing that particular moment with us at the Jesu beautiful church and beautiful moment that will be part of you and part of everyone in your family for the rest of your lives. You're right.
Thank you so much for listening. It's a joy to share these stories. And I know we are but 8 pilgrims of a city that receives millions every year. I don't know the exact number. I made that up right now, but like everybody is there to experience it. And if everybody can have some mm-hmm. sort of experience and carry it on with them in the future and to just let the yeah. sacredness of that city touch them in some way, we'll all be better for it.
That's why we go on pilgrimage. Yeah. So that it can change us. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's a great Easter lesson for us as we keep going.
Keep going.
Thank you. Jillian Cantor. She's the wife of David and the mother of Joseph, Henry, Annie, Clara, Jane, and Leo. Coming up in our second half hour, we meet our featured artist of the week, Sylvia Kay. So stay tuned. Welcome to the Salt and Light Hour Part 2. I'm Deacon Pedro.
A couple years ago, I had a bit of a rough patch mentally, and I realized that I needed a rooted reminder of who God was in that rough patch. Because it's easy to say, you know, like God is good all the time. I say that to my youth ministry kids all the time, but sometimes it's really hard to believe that. And I'm like, music has always reminded me who I was as a person. And I started writing. It was all surrounding Psalm 23. And that was the first worship song that I wrote that I was like, no, this is what I want to do. This is the message I want to share with people.
That's our featured artist of the week, Sylvia Kay, speaking about how she wrote her song, My Shepherd. And we're going to be speaking with Sylvia Kay very shortly. But first, here is that song. Here's Sylvia Kay with her single, My Shepherd. And I
We're listening to Sylvia Kay with her single, My Shepherd. Sylvia Kay is a young singer-songwriter from Caledon, Ontario, who has been playing the piano and singing since she's a little girl and writing her own songs since she was a teenager. I spoke with Sylvia a few weeks ago, and she told me how she didn't want to study music and how she really did not want to do religious music. She wanted to be like Taylor Swift. But then something changed. And in fact, it was writing a song that did it. Here's my conversation with Sylvia Kay.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I know. It's great. Great to meet you and great to learn about you, that you're so close. Literally, I could drive for maybe about 45 minutes. And that's your parish, St. John the Evangelist in Caledon, Ontario. I'm not going to put you on the spot. I'm not going to ask you how old you are, but you're not very old. Tell me a little bit about growing up. Did you grow up in Caledon? Are you from a Catholic family? Is it a musical family?
Yes. So my grandma was the one that pushed me to sing. So did my mom. The way it happened was my parents were pushing us to sort of pick an extracurricular. And I didn't want to do it. I was a very, very shy child. I didn't want to do it. Just wanted to come home. I'm a big reader. Just wanted to come home and be with my books. Okay. And we were passing by a music school as we were talking. And my mom says, you have to pick something and you have to let us know. And so my brother chose soccer and I saw the music school and I said, I want to do piano. And I just said it to make, like, give them peace about it. And I loved it. Not off the start. The classical training for me was a little bit hit and miss.
Okay, so let me stop you for a second. How old were you?
I was 5 and a half.
You were 5 and a half and you just said piano because you just happened to be walking past the music store.
Yeah.
You had never put your hands on a piano before, or like your mom played or your grandmother played the piano. Okay, cool. And you stuck with it.
I stuck with it.
You stuck
by
with it.
By some miracle, I stuck with it.
Well, you're good. You're good at it. were you already like singing? Were you the little girl that was always singing around the house?
I did. I loved music from the get-go. I will say I loved musicals. I loved all of that stuff. My grandma was always singing. She had a tape. I used to fall asleep to either an audiobook or a tape recording of like Alan Jackson every night.
Okay.
Because I hated falling asleep to quiet. So I was always singing. It was always around me. But I don't know. I just found this love and passion buried deep in me. And from there, it just took off. I was about 8 when I started taking it pretty seriously.
Okay. Okay. And I'm going to ask you about writing music in a little bit. But first, I want to know. So I'm presuming it's a Catholic family, you and your brother and your parents.
Yes.
So that was also very normal, going to Mass on Sundays.
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Did you ever sing in like the choir, or was that part of your growing up experience?
Yes. I started as an altar server right after I got my first Holy Communion. And then around the time I was 13 going on 14, our parish was looking for a new choir director. And my mom says, why don't you do it? I'm like, Mom, I'm 13 years old. No one's going to take me seriously. And the next week the priest comes up to me and he goes, would you like to be our new choir director? And I go, Father, I'm 13 years old. I could not do that. He goes, yeah, you can. Just think about it. And my mom was telling me I should do it and telling me I should do it. And I kept telling her why I shouldn't do it. And
that's
I ended up giving it a
crazy.
Try. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it.
Okay. Right and everybody took you seriously.
No, absolutely not. No, I'm pretty sure they were thinking, oh my gosh, what's this little girl doing up there trying to sing? But they were very supportive. They were very supportive.
That's crazy.
Our parishioners are the sweetest bunch. I could not ask for a better church community, truly.
Okay, wonderful. Okay, so you've had a very good, positive church experience, and obviously support from your family. So when did you start writing your own music, or when did you start singing and playing the piano and then writing music?
So I started singing and playing the piano right off the bat.
Right off the bat.
Pretty okay. Well at 5 and a half. I had like just like the little sheet music with the mm-hmm. lyrics underneath that was like Mary Had a Little Lamb.
Yeah.
But my music teacher was pretty adamant about trying to build that voice from a young age. It's easier to do it that way and to develop it that way, which is okay. really nice. I'm so grateful she pushed me. Around 8 is when I started discovering artists that I liked, that I wanted to sing, that weren't necessarily classical.
Okay.
And that's when the love really started thriving, I would say. And then around 14, I started taking writing seriously.
Okay.
I tried writing as a kid, but I thought everything I wrote was bad and I didn't have much confidence behind it. I was 12.
Yeah. It probably wasn't very good.
No, I was looking actually back at some of it recently and I was like, oh. But I remember writing the first song that I was really proud of at 16.
Okay.
And it wasn't a religious song. I didn't want to do the religious scene. I always felt this little inkling, this little calling. I'm like, maybe someday I could do like a small worship project, but I don't think mm-hmm. that's the way I want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to be the next Taylor Swift. I wanted to write all of these songs about summer and love and happiness. And I tried it and I hated it. I love writing, all kinds of writing. I'm an English major, so obviously mm-hmm. I enjoy reading.
Yeah.
And I still love to write songs to help me process my emotions about my own life, but mm-hmm. I find that glorifying God with it has been the biggest blessing.
Okay, so then did that discovery come out of the fact that you tried the Taylor Swift route and it didn't work, or did something happen, something deeper that happened while you were either writing or leading worship where you discovered that this is really where, I guess, your gifts are and where you want to mm-hmm. invest your gifts?
I would say a bit of both. I started realizing I was coming off of a music video shoot and my mom looks at me and she goes, I just have this feeling you're going to do worship one day. Mm. And I'm like, interesting, because I have the same feeling. Mm. And so I kind of tried out the secular music whole debacle and I just realized it wasn't a reflection of who I was and I wasn't feeling passionate about my projects at all. And then a couple years ago, I had a bit of a rough patch mentally. And I realized that I needed a rooted reminder of who God was in that rough patch. Because it's easy to say, you know, like God is good all the time. I say that to my youth ministry kids all the time. But sometimes it's really hard to believe that.
Mm-hmm.
And I sat in my church just before leading worship. And I had about an hour and I sat there. And I'm like, music has always reminded me who I was as a person. And I started writing. It was all surrounding Psalm 23. And that was the first worship song that I wrote that I was like, no, this is what I want to do. This is the message I want to share with people. And I ran with it and I love it. Truly, I can't imagine. It has enhanced my faith life so much.
You're listening to the Salt and Light Hour. I'm Deacon Pedro and we're speaking with Sylvia Kay. And I wanted to know what motivates her writing. So that's where we continue. When you're writing music, so that song that you just mentioned is My Shepherd, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you're, so that's a psalm. Did you write it thinking, or after you wrote it, did you think this is a good song that we can use in liturgy?
Yes. I have had two pastors in a row now that are very comfortable with us using contemporary music,
yep.
Which I'm so grateful for because I think there's so much goodness in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I did write it hoping to play it at Mass. I said, okay, I literally pulled out Psalm 23 as I was writing
it. Okay, so you were thinking that.
Mirroring it. Yeah, exactly.
So then now as you've continued writing, are you thinking, do you sit down and think, okay, I'm going to write a psalm that can be used for Mass or liturgy? Or are you thinking, I'm just going to, you know, this is what's in my heart. It's my prayer. And maybe it will be a liturgical psalm, but maybe it won't. Like, or is it... like, is it more intentional or more organic, I guess, is my question.
I would lean more towards organic. It's kind of, this is what's happening in my heart. I'm going to put it on the page and see what comes of it. That's what I found works for me. I even writing, I try my best not to think about what other people want to hear. I think about what I need to say.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think people relate to that all the much more.
Of course.
And I find that usually it turns into something that can be translated into being sung at liturgy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I typically keep it the more organic route.
Okay. And do you find that you're constantly writing, or is like you have seasons, you know, like right now, maybe you're going through exams, so maybe you're not writing, or is this like an ongoing thing? Like you sit at the piano and it's just stuff just pours out.
I find it's more seasonal, definitely. Yeah. I also find that stress impacts that. I was actually talking to someone about this, like this, the stress of exams. I almost feel that writer's block kind of come in, that like that agitation when I sit down, that tension. And typically when I get into seasons that are a bit more intense, I sit down and I just play something for fun, like Adele, right? Or Hillsong or something special that'll kind of soothe my soul. Yeah, definitely. It's more seasonal.
Yeah. Now you mentioned that you're an English major. You also mentioned that you didn't think you wanted to pursue music. I mean, maybe now, but when you were even a teenager, did you think, when you were thinking, I want to be Taylor Swift, were you thinking that that would be a career, or I want to study music? Or did you think, no, I want this to be just something that I love, and I know that I'm always going to be doing it on the side, but it's not what I want to study in university?
Yeah, I always knew I would never study music in university, truthfully.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people encouraged me to, and kind of encouraged me to pray on it. But I just realized that I loved it so, so deeply. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to jeopardize that by making it an area of study.
Right.
I mean, you hear people say all the time, yeah, I used to love to read, and then I went to university, and I was just so afraid.
Never read
that
again. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That I just
decided. It's not like you haven't studied music. I mean, you've been studying music since you're 5 years old. So it's probably always going to be part of your life. And the fact that the language, I mean, you said you're an English major, you need that as a songwriter as well.
Yes.
So that's a beautiful thing. So you spoke about My Shepherd, which is based on Psalm 23. We also at the beginning of the show listened to another of your songs, Never Left. We teased it because it's not officially out yet, but can you tell us a little bit about writing Never Left?
Absolutely. Never Left was, believe it or not, the most frustrating song to write because I couldn't nail the timing.
Really?
It started as a completely different song. It was all about kind of like the story of creation. And then I realized it didn't fit. Something just felt so wrong about it. And I put it away and I revisited a couple days later. This is the song that took me the longest to write. And I pulled it up again, and it just felt so wrong. It didn't feel like the message I wanted to send in that moment. It wasn't reflective of what was on my heart. And I pulled it up and I rewrote it, and I was happy with it. And then I pulled it out again a couple days later, and I realized the timing was completely off. So I pulled out my metronome. I worked on it again, took it to the studio, and was convinced that my producer was going to be like, no, like we can't, this isn't recordable. And he loved it. And I'm so excited about this song. It's kind of looking back on your life and realizing that God has never left you and he never will. And I think everyone needs to hear that message at some point in their life. And I'm honestly really, really proud of this one.
That's funny that your answer, and I love your answer because it was such a technical answer, but I wonder if the struggle technically was because what the song is about something that people spiritually struggle with. And so that's a very interesting thing. Thank you for sharing that. And then we're going to end the show by playing Glimpse of Heaven, another of your songs. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So Glimpse of Heaven was a song that I wrote kind of hoping to tell people that God will never stop loving them. We hear that in Romans, that nothing will ever separate us from the love of God. And I think I needed that reminder in the moment, and I think everyone needs that reminder. And I just wanted to encapsulate this feeling that no matter how many times you sin, no matter how many times you fall back on the same sin, you're still God's child, and he's going to love you, and he's going to save you from it. He already has. We just have to accept that in our hearts. And Glimpse of Heaven was my attempt to kind of take God loving me from my head and embedding it into my heart, because I think there's a gap between our head and our heart. And sometimes what we know in our mind, we can't always feel in our heart. So Glimpse of Heaven is my attempt to feel it in my heart.
That's great. They do say that the longest journey is the one from the head to the heart. So thank you for helping us with that. Any more music that you have kind of inside of you, or any that you're thinking of recording? I don't know if there's more recordings for you.
Yeah. So I have two that are kind of in my phone and waiting for their little moment. And the other one is a cover of Gratitude by Brandon Lake, which is another song I absolutely adore. I love singing it at Mass. People love it. And I was originally going to release it before Lent, but I realized that I didn't want to because it has the H word in it. And I refused to put people in that tempting position of listening to it. So
can't be saying hallelujah during Lent.
No, it's going to wait until after Lent.
Okay. So looking forward to more recordings from you. And congratulations on the great work that you're doing so far. And I guess you're almost done your university career, so congratulations on that as well. And looking forward to hearing more from you, because it's really good stuff.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
You can follow Sylvia Kay on your social media and listen to her music anywhere you stream music. Here now to take us out is Sylvia Kay with her single, Glimpse of Heaven.
He laid it down on Calvary, your blood and tears echo inside of me. The veil was torn as you screamed, my God, why have you forsaken? Trust you.
Listening to Sylvia Kay with her single Glimpse of Heaven, and that will take us to the end of the program. Be sure to download the Salt and Light Plus app. That's the best place to watch Salt and Light TV live, as well as all our shows and documentaries on demand, and also to listen to this program, the Salt and Light Hour. Today, let's continue to pray for peace in the world. We need peace. Let's pray for peace in Ukraine and peace in the Middle East. Let's also pray for all those who are trying to create good Christian content for kids and for parents as they learn to trust and surrender their children to God. And let's pray for all of this through the intercession of God's divine mercy this week. Thank you for being with me today. I pray that this program has blessed you. Please pray for me, and don't forget to pray for each other.
and take care of each other. I'm Deacon Pedro, and this has been the Salt and Light Hour.